So cultivating the loving kindness towards all sentient beings. So this also have three subheadings. The first one is meditating on all sentient beings as one's mother. As we remember what we did yesterday very clearly today, so similarly, we remember what we did when we were a child many years before. The main reason is that there is the continuity of the consciousness which flows from since we are a child to now, which makes us remember what we did when we were young. And we often see that the new infants who are just born also tend to remember many things which are actually due to their own, their past life imprints. And the infant babies, when they are just born, do not need to be taught how to drink milk from their mother, and which is all due to the previous life's accumulation or acclimatization. Sorry, there's some lines missing in His Holiness reading. And this morning we read with respect to the continuity of the mind, which ultimately is the main reason behind the proof of the next and the subsequent rebirth, and also the previous rebirth. And the text further reads that since there is no beginning to our life, and from the infinite beginning, we are coming by taking different rebirths, and the continuity of the main consciousness to all these rebirths arrived till today from all the previous lives. And since we have took rebirths numberless times in this samsaric world, there is no place or no life that we have not taken any rebirth. And also all the species of the animals, we have already taken the form of their rebirth. And there is no actions or no profession that you have not done in your life. And even from now on, if we are not able to cut the continuation of our rebirth in this samsaric world, we will tend to continue in this way until we become liberated. We are liberated from the samsara. So in order to cultivate the loving kindness toward all sentient beings, it is very important first to recognize all sentient beings as one's mother. And this is very difficult actually to develop for oneself. And if one cannot generate such a kind of feeling at the initial stage, we need to make effort towards engaging in purification process. And for example, if it is a holiday or a break from your work or your studies, and you can think for yourself in a quiet place and with your hand on your cheek, and you can cry or you can will that my mother, looking at all sentient beings as your mother. And you can also put reason for yourself that if all sentient beings are not your mother, then what about your previous and the next and the subsequent lives? Of course, you have a mother in this life. So if you have a mother in this life, of course, you might have another mother in one of your previous lives. Otherwise, all your previous lives had to be born without a mother, which may not be a possibility. So in this kind of reasoning, we tend to make ourselves aware of the fact that in all the lives as human beings, human rebirth, we tend to depend on the mother to give birth to us. So therefore, in this way, you can generally develop the sense of looking at all beings as your mother. And also the fact that your previous and the number of times you have taken the rebirth as human alone is countless. And the next is, once you have recognized all the sentient beings as one mother, next is remembering or recollecting their kindness. And to meditate upon the second, recollecting their kindness, is first visualize your mother in front of you. And the mother also quite a senior or an aged mother in front of you, your mother as an aged person in front of you. And looking at that mother, you should visualize that not only in this life, from the beginningless time you have been helping a lot to me, and you have been my mother for millions of times. And when you have been my mother, you have kept me in your womb for 9 months. And when I was in your womb, you always took a great care of me. For example, you do not bind your belt too tight in the fear that I may get affected. And of course, even though you may like to eat and drink different varieties of food and drinks, but you don't indulge in all those habits because you feel that it may not be good for the health of the baby inside. And also, while you are moving or going from one place to another, and in all your behaviors in your daily life, you always be very cautious that the baby inside you doesn't get affected by what you do. So in this way, you are very kind to me. This is the initial way to meditate about the kindness of one's mother. And even we can see in animals that when the certain kind of animals, when they have the offsprings and the babies in their womb, and if someone hurl a stone at them, they tend to protect the babies and instead face their body towards the stone. And therefore, if such kind of compassion or the love is there from the mother's side, even for the animals, then for the humans is something that we do not have to mention here, because the human beings are considered to be more intelligent. And when I was born in this life for the first time, I mean, even in this life, I'm so ugly looking. And there is no way that I can sustain by myself. And my body is covered with all the pus and the blood and so on, and also bad odor arising out of my body. And at this time, you took great care of me by washing my body and keeping me on very warm and smooth cushions. And when I cry, you held me with your 10 fingers, with both your 2 hands, and try all your means so that I can be pacified. And you, out of your fear that I may get cold, you always keep me near your body. And you always smile at me and look at me all the time. And also, you have the best words to call my name and give me milk very often. So in this way, if we are able to remember the kindness of one's mother, even in one life, is enormous, is immeasurable.
Thank you.
So this is about the recollecting the kindness. And the third category is how to repay the kindness, which has been already read by His Holiness. And the next is generating the mind or the thought cherishing other, which again start with generating or developing the loving kindness. And the next passage presents about the benefits of meditating on loving kindness. And then the next passage presents the details on how to meditate on great compassion. And in terms of the object of the compassion and the loving kindness, it is all the suffering sentient beings. So in terms of the object of these two, the loving kindness and great compassion, there is no difference. And if you look at all the mother sentient beings, and by focusing on all the mother sentient beings, and if you aspire that may they all have happiness, then that kind of attitude or the mind becomes what we call loving kindness. And with your focus on all sentient beings, and if you aimed that may they be all clear of sufferings, then it's a great compassion. For example, if someone has his hand and all the body limbs burned in fire, and in such a state, if you offer him, if he has no ability to enjoy the good food and so on, similarly, all the lower realms, the sentient beings who are born in the lower realms, are constantly upon great sufferings, great pain, and unless they are liberated from those sufferings, there is no way that they have they can enjoy the happiness. And even for the higher rebirths, due to ignorance and other afflicted emotions and being influenced of all those ignorance and other emotions, whatever the actions they perform for the three doors, body, speech and mind, all result as the cause to be reborn in lower realms. And once they are reborn in the lower realms, the suffering that they have to undergo is the same as presented before. So this is the brief way to meditate on the compassion. And the extensive way to meditate on the compassion is to focus on an animal that in front of you, for example, a kind of a sheep or a goat. And with such a kind of evident object in front of you, and then if you think about the causes of that animal, the sufferings, why that animal needs to be reborn in animal realms, and all the suffering that he must be undergoing, and due to ignorance, they cannot escape from their predators, and so on. And even once it dies, there is no way that those animals will get a better rebirth, and there is no protector from them, and so on. So this is for the animal realms. Then gradually, the focus can be shifted to the hell realms, the hungry ghosts, and so on. And the next is the presentation about the measure of generating the compassion. So at what time or the point of time can we be sure for ourselves that we have developed compassion? The metaphor here goes that if your only son or daughter is suffering from a great illness, then how much the mother will have love and compassion towards that child, the only child of that mother. And if we are able to generate such a kind or the same level of compassion towards all sentient beings, and also the wish that you will be single-handedly or by yourself will work hard or do anything it costs to liberate all the sentient beings from the suffering. If we are able to develop such a kind of mind, then that is the measure of generating or developing the compassion. And Bodhava, the great master, was once asked by an old lady about what is the measure of generating the loving kindness. We've already discussed the measure of generating the compassion. Then Bodhava replied to that old mother that it is similar to generate the loving kindness to your only child, and you have such a kind of love and kindness and compassion towards your only child. Similarly, if you have a similar kind of thought towards all sentient beings, that may all sentient beings be able to have the cause and the happiness. Happiness and the causes of happiness. So if we are able to develop such a state, then one is said to have generated the loving kindness, which is the fourth of the 7-point cause and effect. And the next is meditating on the special intent. And the special intent here actually refers to the great compassion. And if you just have an aspirational compassion or the mind, that may all sentient beings have all the happiness and the causes, and may they be eliminated of all the sufferings. So if your motivation remains only at the level of aspiration, and if it do not bring your personal or individual action out of your aspiration, so then such kind of mind will not be able to lead us to the state of enlightenment. So therefore, looking at all the sentient beings and generating such a mind, that may I myself be the one who liberated all these sentient beings from the state of suffering. And if you generate such a kind of a state of mind effortlessly all the time, then you are said to have generate the special intention. Actually, even at the first level of recognizing all the sentient beings and recollecting their kindness and repaying their kindness, you still have a sense of care for the sentient beings, but the sense of or the measure of your the compassion that you are able to generate at the sixth level, which is the special intent at the generation of special intent, it is enormous, it is much more extensive and effortless compared to the previous ones. The next is generating the mind towards wishing for enlightenment. Then the question comes whether you will be able to complete or satisfy all the needs of the people, all the mother sentient beings. And as of now, you have no capacity to even fulfill the wishes of even one sentient beings. And let go of you yourself, even the arahats in this class of the solitary realizers and the hearers, the Sharvakas and the Pratigya Buddhas are not able to benefit the sentient beings in a large scale. And of course, even the bodhisattvas who are in the path of accumulation and the preliminary paths also, even though they may be able to benefit the sentient beings in a large scale due to the development of bodhicitta and great compassion, but compared to the Buddha, the enlightened one, their action or benefit is very limited. And we can take the metaphor as the Buddha's benefit to sentient beings, as the whole universe and the first level of bodhisattvas is mere a pinch of the sand in our hand. And the metaphor is again used for the ocean and a small stream. And the next outline presents about the actual means of generating the bodhicitta. So at this stage, you generate the mind that in order to benefit all the mother sentient beings, and may they all be elemental clear of the sufferings, and may they have the happiness. But in order to make that happen, I myself have to understand all the different mental dispositions and eliminate all the affliction and obscurations to omniscient mind. So unless I attain the state of my mind as being omniscient, I'm not able to benefit as much as more effectively as the Buddhas. So therefore, I need to attain the Buddhahood. And in order to attain Buddhahood, I have to generate the bodhicitta. And may I be also blessed by my spiritual masters and the deities in order to generate them. So having supplicated in this way, meditate at the crown of your head, your Vajra Master, and who is no different from the deity, and you visualize as a similar one of your Master appears from the original one and dissolve into you, and your whole body and you yourself being transformed as the Shakya Buddha. And now, since you're in the form of Shakyamuni Buddha, so from your body and from speech and mind, through the three doors, the nectars flow and flows to the lower realms and erase the suffering of all the lower realms, especially by the cool nature of the nectar. All the thirst and other sufferings in the hot hells are cleared. And for those in the cold health, all the sufferings with respect to the coldness are clear, and so on for the other realms. So having here completed the 7-point cause and effect, which is also one of the main means to generate the bodhicitta as presented by Adisha. And the next is as presented by Shantideva in the engaging in the deeds of bodhisattva. The means to generate the bodhicitta by exchanging self with other. And first visualize that all the mother sentient beings are surrounding near you with from all sides. And all the sentient beings have from the beginningless time the sense of the self-cherishing, which by itself naturally do not think about the other people's and always ignore the other people's cause. And then meditate and think about yourself, that even though you have this self-cherishing, which consider yourself as the most important compared to other, but then the fact is that you and the other are same in the respect that we all wish to have happiness and do not wish to have suffering. So we are similar or common in this matter. Then if that is the common for all of us, then how is it that we always feel very near towards our families and our friends, and we always wanted to neglect the neutral or even wanted to bring harm to what we call the enemies? And then are the other peoples not really worthy of your love? So by raising this question, then think about yourself. The many reasons why the mother sentient beings are actually worthy of your love and compassion. And also think about the 7 pieces of cause and effect, 7-point cause and effect here, that these sentient beings has been your mother and they've been very benefit to you and so on. And even for this life, since you're a young age, how they have been benefiting you and so on. So there are many reasons through which you could meditate that the other sentient beings are worthy of your love and compassion. So to summarize, all the benefits and the happiness that we have is due to the kindness of all the mother sentient beings. Even the human rebirth with all the leisures and advantages also arise due to abiding by the first training, which is the training on ethical discipline, by refraining from indulging in negative things, which again depends on other people. And also, whatever the wealth and the possessions that you have is all the result of your generosity. And again, to practice generosity, you need other people. So therefore, it is again due to the other sentient beings. And the good complexion and the beauty of your is also due to the tolerance, the practice of tolerance. And tolerance has to be also practiced against some other people. And ultimately, even the state of enlightenment itself has to be attained with the help of the mother sentient beings. And the six perfections and also the two great accumulations also rely on the mother sentient beings. And after you become Buddha, and the continuity of your enlightened deeds towards the mother sentient beings also rely on the mother sentient existence of the mother sentient beings. And also the great Mahayana path and the path and the realizations all depend on the mother sentient beings. So therefore, if there are many ways to remember the kindness of mother sentient beings. And from the other point, if you do not cherish other people, there are a lot of negativities that you will gain after that. So in one way, you can draw a distinction between self-cherishing and thought-cherishing other people. And if you cherish someone, when you cherish or love yourself or your near and friend ones, you develop desire and attachment towards these people. And the other side, you generate anger and hatred. And through this, all the afflictions arise. And through these afflicted emotions, when they become evident or arise, then due to that, we accumulate a lot of negative karmas, which again brings us to the cycle of suffering, back to the samsaric world. And especially through the three kinds of sufferings. So the mere term of suffering, when we hear, we really feel frightened, it is all due to the self-cherishing thought. To summarize, in this life, all the fears and all the sufferings and all the negativities that happens to us is all due to the strong sense of self-cherishment, self-cherishing. And if you also look at the life story of Lord Buddha, when he was born in the hell realm while generating the mind for enlightenment, he developed a great thought for cherishing other people. And with that, he was able to generate the bodhicitta. And after that, we can see he became Buddha by completing the two accumulations. So we are similar in terms of Buddha, that at one time we all have the self-cherishing, but now the Lord Buddha has become enlightened one, having eliminated all the emotions. This is also one way to think about the need to cherish other people. And another way to make us cherish other people is if you understand the circle or the nature of the cause and effect. If you neglect other people and you end up killing and also stealing and so on, the sexual misconduct and other physical negativities and so on, the verbal and the mental negativities. With that result in your accumulation, a lot of negative karmas, which again bring you to the circle of samsara. So actually it's similar for all sentient beings that we have the self-cherishing thought from the beginningless of time. Therefore, we are very familiar with that kind of thought. Then since we are not familiar with the thought-cherishing other, so will it be possible for us to also become familiar with the thought, or can we train ourselves in some way that we could develop the self-cherishing thought effortlessly? And here the text reads that it is definitely possible. Because the first reason here is that even though your parents or the very formation of your body, which is the father's sperm and mother's blood, the mother's egg, which is actually different from yourself, which is not a part of your continuity of the self, but as it grows into your physical body, then later you generate, you're able to gain a sense of self, the I towards those body, the my. So the thought of cherishing your body, which is actually not yours before. So similarly, something which is not have been yours all the years, but later we can generate this cherishing towards those other people. So similarly, if we are familiar, we can also generate the same kind of cherishment towards other people. And the Buddhas of the three times also from the beginning generating the mind for enlightenment, and at the resultant state achieving the Buddhahood and then turning the will of Dharma is all for the benefit of sentient beings. So therefore, the Buddhas of the three times are cherishing the mother sentient beings a lot. And they consider the sentient beings very precious. Therefore, if you bring harm to the others or the sentient beings, actually you're inflicting the harm to the Buddha. So these are the benefits of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta and the training through the 7-point cause and effect, and also the generating through the exchanging self and other, and the presentation on the later, it is similar to as commentary, the literal commentary of the engaging in the deeds of Buddha. And of course, if we meditate and train ourselves further, then of course, once we achieve the state where it becomes easy and familiar, then it will automatically come by itself. As it is stated in the text that once you're familiar, there is nothing that you cannot achieve. When I was young, I remember very clearly, and Thadur Rinpoche and sometimes when Thadur Rinpoche cracked a joke here and there, and I asked Rinpoche that bodhicitta seems to be very difficult, and Rinpoche told me that it is possible. And Rinpoche also told me that at that time the Rinpoche himself have a bodhicitta mind, and at that time I have a great admiration for the awakening mind. But at that time, that whether I could myself be familiar and I could also generate the awakening mind, it was out of my mind at that time. Then after arriving in India, of course, I do have respect and admiration, but it's still very far away. Then in 1960s, when I took the transmission from the engaging of the deeds from Khun Lama Rinpoche, and when I also give teaching to other people and also train myself, then I feel a bit of closeness towards the mind of awakening mind. And if one is really familiar and trained, I think we can bring a change to our mind. And now I feel if I work hard, I can attain the bodhicitta. Reading from page number 269. So till here we have completed the means of generating the bodhicitta, which is the first the 7-point cause and effect, and exchanging the self with other. Next is how to take the bodhicitta mind by ritual. Is how to first take the bodhicitta for those people who have never received or who have never developed it before, and how to sustain it further once you have already generated it. And the aspirational awakening mind is very extensively presented by Adisha in the Lamentable Path of Enlightenment. And here the different verses for taking the aspirational mind and the engaging mind, the engaging bodhicitta and the aspirational bodhicitta. There are a few different verses for taking these vows. And also one need to be familiar with the rituals of taking the vows of Bodhisattva vows, and also studying the precepts and the commitments with respect to it, as it is presented in many texts. And in the sweep path, it is stated that the verses for taking the aspirational and engaging mind are similar. So there may be a way to do that. And this is the way to take the bodhicitta mind by the rituals. And next is how to sustain this further once you have already taken it. And with that, there is another two subheadings: the precepts and commitments with respect to the aspirational mind and the engaging mind. And the first one is in one's life, for this life, how to train in the ways that the mind that we have generated doesn't degenerate it. And next is how to train for the future lives. And the first one is, as Potowa has presented, the benefits of Potowa has, in a very content way, presented the benefits of bodhicitta mind. He presented in a very short way that every benefits and all the paths and the realizations of the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas are actually depend on the bodhicitta. And if there is bodhicitta, then of course all the other benefits will come. And if there is no bodhicitta, then there won't be any other realizations. And we can understand the extensive benefits from other texts. Next is, we have to assure ourselves and generate a very firm conviction that whatever it may be, at any cost, I won't let go of the bodhicitta. Next is the commitment with respect to the engaging mind. And the next is how to train in the perfections having generated the bodhicitta mind on, we're on page number 272. So we will move to the liberation in the palm of your hand. In page number 499. Day 16. Training the mind in the great scope stages of the path. These are three headings, teaching that the development of bodhicitta is the sole gateway to the mayana, and teaching its benefit as well. How to develop bodhicitta, how to set about training yourself after the development of bodhicitta. In the above sections, dealing with the small and medium scopes, you had to be motivated by renunciation. We're reading from page number 500. When you put your effort principally into the three high trainings, you will achieve merely a state of liberation for yourself and merely put an end to your own samsara. This is not good enough. You will be of not only partial benefit to yourself and others because you will not have abandoned all that has to be abandoned or achieve every good quality. Later, you will have to enter the Mayana at its most basic level. As it says in the short perfection of Wisdom Sutra, forsake forever the two vehicles fertile for benefiting the world, and enter the compassion vehicle taught by the victory sage, whose very nature smacks of benefits for others. As Kishipadova said, don't carry your load across the river twice, enter the Mayana at the outset. It would be like having to cross the same river twice, but there is more. Arhats experience such inconceivable bliss when they are absorbed in the spirit of the peace that they stay in this absorption for many eons and have no wish ever to leave it. Meanwhile, someone who had been living in hell might achieve an optimum human rebirth, enter the Mayana path, and take about the same amount of time to achieve enlightenment. Thus, these arhats set themselves at a great distance from Buddhahood. Suppose someone had studied the Mayana, developed a propensity for it, but have reborn in hell because of developing wrong views. Such a person would be enlightened quicker than any of the Mayana propensities who had entered the Hinayana path and achieved arhatship. It is therefore better to be of the former type. For example, when the Sharvaka Kashyapa was giving teachings on Hinayana Dharma, there were 60 monks who had gained arahatship, but Manjushri had already gone to them and taught them Mayana Dharma. This teaching proved too much for them, and they developed wrong views, thus taking rebirth in hell. Kashyapa asked Buddha, our teacher, for some explanation, and Buddha said that was the skillful means of Manjushri, such an excellent teaching. In the same way, when Buddha's rose the Sharvaka and Pratigya Buddha arhats from their blissful absorption and forced them onto Mayana, these arhats will not try hard to develop such qualities. So the text of Lamrim is actually mainly based on the presentation of bodhicitta. Therefore, the small scope person's practice is actually referred here as common to the small and the medium scope, which shows very clearly that the main presentation or the content of the Lamrim text is the presentation on the greater vehicle and the greater person's scope and the paths common to it. The unique path of the great people. Reading from page 502. Teaching that the only way to enter the Mayana is to develop bodhicitta. The thing that determines whether you have joined the ranks of the Mayana is whether you have developed bodhicitta in your mind stream. Jesongkhapa said, it is not enough that the Dharma is Mayana. The person must also belong to Mayana. You become a Mayanist by having bodhicitta. If you merely understand bodhicitta, you are not much of a Mayanist. If you do not have this bodhicitta in your mind stream but practice, for example, the generation and the completion stages of the Guhya Samaja Tantra, the pinnacle, the king of tantras, apart from such a practice not becoming a cause for your enlightenment, you would not even be able to embark on the Mayana path of accumulation. And aside from this, such a practice would not even become a Mayana Dharma. But if you have bodhicitta, For our real practitioners who practice the generation stage and the completion stage, of course they need to have bodhicitta. But for someone at the beginning level who have not yet generated the bodhicitta, even for them it is very important to be able to generate some sense of the even a slight taste of bodhicitta in order to practice the pinnacle of Tantra, the Guhya Samaja. And aside from this, continue reading from page 502. And aside from this, such a practice would not even become a Mahayana Dharma. But if you have bodhicitta, even saying a single Om Mani Padme Hum would be a Mahayana Dharma and a cause for your enlightenment. In the precious garland, Nagarjuna says, if you desire supreme enlightenment for yourself and the world, know that its root is a bodhicitta, as firm as Mary, the king of mountains. If you do not have this mind, your meditations on the generation stage of the secret tantras are like staring at the spectacle of the deity's mansion. And as for your meditations on the completion stage, it is said breathing in, holding in, and expelling it. In other words, such energy-driven practices, etc., would be no better than walking a pair of billows. The unique rapidity of the secret tantras is due to the fact that they increase one's bodhicitta so very much. Chengarabe Doji said this in praise, I have studied the Dharma under Pujongawan Jamba. Even when Lama Jamba gives a major initiation, he talks only about the lumbrim in the explanatory parts of the initiation. If someone else were to see this, he would take it that Lama Jamba could not discuss the secret tantras. But this Lama speaks from his understanding of the whole point of the complete path. Reading from page 503. A yogi in the Hevraja Tantra who had no bodhicitta had achieved the state of a stream enterer. Adisha was astonished to hear this story and said, blame it on his not having bodhicitta. People who have meditated on He Vajra can even go to hell. That yogi had done relatively well, for there were many more people reciting the mantras of the wrathful deities while lacking bodhicitta that were reborn as malevolent spirits or in hell. There's a story about the local deity of Chushur. He was formerly a person who did major retreats but later took rebirth as a local god. If the He Vajra yogi who achieved the level of a stream enterer had bodhicitta, he would have been enlightened in that very lifetime. Instead, he achieved a Hinayana result and not a single cause to become enlightened. His lack of bodhicitta was to blame. Bodhicitta is something we might well call profound dharma. I have already told you similar stories, such as the one about the Brahmin Chanakya, the other about the Indian yogi who practiced the Yamantaka Tantra and was reborn as an evil spirit that went to Tibet, only be evicted by Adisha's offering of ritual cakes. We also had the story of the yogi of Yamantaka Tantra from Pembo who was reborn as a hungry ghost in the shape of a deity and went to hang round a burnt offering ceremony for the dead that was being held at the home of his former neighbors and benefactors. These days, most people prize things like the visions of deities, clairvoyance, or miraculous powers, but without bodhicitta, you could still go to lower realms. And any clairvoyance or having such powers would you have no benefit. When you have this bodhicitta mind, you may not make much effort in other things, but you will have the very root of Mahayana Dharma. Any topic, be it sutra or tantra, if I look at the way I'm cough, I think that I have to take a toffee. I have a certain toffee here against the coughing. Is here now. How is it? So Visualize says, you were giving the same. These days, most people prize things like visions of deities, clairvoyance, or miraculous powers. But without bodhicitta, you could still go to the lower realms. The order of the outlines is actually as per the Lamrim Chemo, the extensive text on Lamrim. But for the actual meditative state, it's more effective if you meditate as per the order presented by Shantideva in engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva. When you have this bodhicitta mind, you may not make such much effort in other things. Continue reading from 503. But you will have the very root of Mayana Dharma. Any topic, be it sutra or tantra, is Mayana or not, depending on whether you have this mind. If you already have this mind, even giving a ball or barley flour, talk to an animal, will be a cause for you to gain full enlightenment. This would also apply to everyday activities that are normally neutral in character. Great bodhisattvas can even convert non-virtue into virtue because they do all things in conjunction with bodhicitta. When you do not have this mind but meet with the right conditions to develop the wisdom that understands emptiness, such conditions act only as a cause for any one of the three types of enlightenment. As a Sharaka, Pratigya Buddha or Buddha, so that wisdom is like a mother. But when you have bodhicitta, such conditions act as cause for your full enlightenment only. Bodhicitta is therefore like a father. This is why the former is called mother. To sum up, unless you have absolutely no yearning for enlightenment, you must make bodhicitta your basic practice. Anything of value, such as good qualities in any of the three vehicles, in the end comes from bodhicitta. If someone were to ask us what our basic practice is, we might reply, I recite Hayagriva, Vajrapani, or Yamantaka. But in fact, most of us have usually met the three poisonous delusions, our basic practice. Adisha was a scholar of all these dharmas, but this did not satisfy him. Instead, he sailed the oceans for 13 difficult months to hear the complete instruction on bodhicitta from Suvarnadipa Guru and made this his basic practice. He paid much more respect to this guru who taught him these instructions than to his other gurus. Yet Suvarnadipa was a Chittamatran, so his views were inferior. Yesterday, did the tea offering. So today, please make the tea offering now.
So with regard to this prayer of the six-armed marker, the prayer itself says that the Makala reached from the tree and came from the tree and take the torma. But some people say that he held the tree in his hand and took the torma. And then it's all this of saying that with regard to the skull on his head, some people say that Instead of the number five, they refer to these five skulls are adorning me instead of five. So with regard to bodhicitta, its core benefits or the features are such that it overwhelms or outshines even the Shravaka, arahats, or the superior beings. And however small the bodhicitta may be, still it will always be like a diamond, which, however small in size, never loses its name, diamond. So we must see if we can think, we can genuinely develop this mind, our mind stream, as this is the best thing we can do. Failing that, we must see if we can gain some sort of contrived experience of it. Or failing even this, see if we can gain a low level of insight into it. This is why they say that if we do not pursue this as one of the topics of a particular meditation session, effort is only deity meditation or recitation of mantra will just be pointless hard work. What a great pity. So you gain the name Child of Victors and so forth. As it is said, engaging Bodhisattva deeds of Bodhisattva. Engaging the Bodhisattva deeds, from the moment pathetic beings trapped in samsara's prison developed bodhicitta, they are given the name children of Sugatas. Today I have been born in the Buddha's lineage. I have become a child of the Buddhas. So whether or not you become a child of the victors, victorious ones depends on this very thing. If you have not developed bodhicitta, you are not a bodhisattva or a child of victors. Although you may be clever and able to work miracles, learn it in the five sciences, have gained direct understanding of emptiness, or have completely abandoned all delusions, you will not have joined the ranks of the Mahayana. So it's a Kadampa master says that it bodhicitta itself helps in accumulating merit and overcoming obstacles and cleansing the stains within the mind stream. So it is like a philosopher's stone on page 508. So with regard to the root of virtues, there are those of the virtues which are inferior to the one which is influenced by bodhicitta. So because you are determined to work for the sentient beings and for the sentient beings until the end of space, therefore the merit that is gained through or complemented by bodhicitta never goes to waste until enlightenment is reached. And so, and to amass enormous stock of merit easily, Shantideva explained, it is like supreme philosopher's stone, for it will turn your impure body into something priceless, the body of a Buddha, thus always maintaining this thing with we call bodhicitta. Other virtue is like the plantain tree, for it is barren once fruited. Bodhicitta is a living tree that continues to fruit and grow. In other words, you could have nothing better than bodhicitta in order to complete your merit collection. If you were to be generous without bodhicitta to hundreds of thousands of beings for many hundreds of thousands of years and fill the billion worlds with jewels, the karmic results of this would eventually come to an end. This would also not be a deed of a child of a victors and would not act as a cause for your Buddhahood. But if bodhicitta, if you were to give a ball barely due to an animal, the results of your action would never come to an end. It would be a deed of a child of the Buddha, victorious one, and would act as a cause for your Buddhahood. If, with this mind, you offer only one stick of incense, they say that it confers the same benefits as offering the same number of sticks as there are in sentient beings. If you have this mind and recite a single Om Mani Padme Hum, it will be as beneficial as reciting this mantra as many times as there are sentient beings. Then next there's once during the Buddha's lifetime, a beggar with this mind offered a small oil lamp to the Buddha. Ananda could not put it out, and the Tathagata said that even the wind of destruction at the ends and could not blow it out due to the continual growth in the merit from engaging the Bodhisattva deeds. It says, whenever one truly takes up with an irreversible mind this thought to completely liberate the infinite realms of sentient beings thereafter, even in one's sleep or in unguarded moments, one's merit will have power. Much merit comes continually and will become an as enormous as space itself. And then, in other words, once you have adopted then to engage the engagement form of the bodhicitta vow, you will receive a continual flow of virtue even while asleep or when negligent. If there is great benefit in wanting to rid one sentient being of a headache, how could the wish for to free all sentient beings of all their immeasurable suffering from illness not be greatly meritorious? Much the same thing is said in engaging the bodhisattva deeds. Now, if the thought to free beings of only their headaches is such a beneficial thought that brings one boundless merit, then need I speak of the wish to free every being of all their boundless miseries and wanting each of them to develop every good quality, give an ordinary food to a few beings, and that act of generosity with food lasts for a moment. Yet the person who perfunctorily fills bellies for half a day is praised as a person of virtue. When then to say of he who over a long time has always tried to fulfill all the wishes of infinite numbers of beings with the pure place of the Sugatas. In short, it is said that when you are motivated by this mind, any virtue you create will provide you with the same benefit as the total number of sentient beings. The next section is you rapidly purify sins and obscurations. Nothing is better for the purification of sins. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds says any sin of great and intolerable force will overpower any virtue other than sublime bodhicitta. And that is, you have committed some huge sin that could be otherwise be expiated, but it would be consumed if you were to generate this mind. This is illustrated by the story of Arya Sangha. Just one instance of generating compassion purified far more sins and obscurations than he could in 12 years of virtuous practice. So you might have some intolerable sin, but when you rely on this mind, you'll immediately be free of it, just as you would some great danger when you rely on a hero. What prudent person would not then rely on this? (Clears throat) Then great sins are sure to be consumed in a moment, as if by the fire at the end of the time or eon. That is, no matter how big your heap of sins, it will be purified white, like kindling burning the fires at the end of the eons. For these reasons, in order to destroy your sins, it is better to meditate on bodhicitta for one session than to try for 100 years to purify these sins by some other means divorced from this mind. Next section, you accomplish whatever you wish. When you develop this mind, you effortlessly achieve all your desires, both temporary and ultimate. The best thing to wish for would be that all sentient beings abandon their unwanted suffering and achieve their desired happiness. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deed says, it is said that with this, the boundless mass of beings will easily reach supreme happiness. If you have developed bodhicitta in your mind stream, you will easily succeed in all things, both ordinary and extraordinary. The knowledge of mantras or tantric spells described in the tantric canon and so on. We have not accomplished the set of trivial deeds described in sutras and tantras in certain anthologies and so on, making it rain, stopping hail, and so forth. Blame this on our lack of bodhicitta. Thus, if you want to rid yourself and others of obstacles like sickness, etc., and want to have greater abilities, you must develop this mind. It is wrong to think as an instruction taught on some tantric spell is at fault if it does not work for you. You need not resort to mantras, hum hum pe pe, for instance, or tantric paraphernalia. You can do these. So there is, at a training level, when you train your mind in the visualization of the certain things, you are instructed to train in bodhicitta. And so His Holiness was commenting on page 513 in this paragraph. In other words, all the happiness of this world, all Shravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, universal emperors, and the like ones, some from the power of the Buddhas, the Buddha developed from the Bodhisattvas, the Bodhisattvas come from Bodhicitta, so on. So not only is Bodhicitta the sole root of all the happiness of beings, it is also the essence of all the 84,000 bundle collection of dharmas. It is the main practice of the children of the victors. The superiority of the sacred tantra derives from the power of this mind. And Geshe Thumpa asked a man, Drumthampa asked a man for news of the three Kadamba brothers. The man told Drum about each of them and their many dharma activities. How wonderful, said Drumthampa. That's really something. Then the man told him that Geshe Kamlungpa, of Geshe Lamlungpa. He lives at the head of a ravine. Sometimes his eyes are half closed. Sometimes he cries. That's all he ever does. Drum folded his hands and said, by way of praise, he's really putting Dharma into practice, engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattvas. Tells us it is a quintessence of the butter churned from the milk of holy Dharma. Bodhicitta is like the essence of the old Dharma. Thus, I urge everyone to do whatever they can to employ the method or to develop it. Whether a particular teaching is Mahayana depends on whether it is whether it has bodhicitta in it or for the moment put aside Dharma. Everyone calls profound and practice bodhicitta seriously, but many are the Sakya, Geloka, Yuan, Nyingma practitioners who do not understand this point yet still want a Buddhahood. They meditate on the two stages of the sacred tantra, dispense with bodhicitta, and still hope to make rapid progress on the path. They act, to use a colloquial expression, like a man with an unwanted goiter on his precious neck. No Buddha of the three times became a Buddha without developing bodhicitta. A potential Buddha not needing bodhicitta is something unheard of. Therefore, someone without any bodhicitta will not receive the Buddhahood they want. They haven't the hope of achieving Buddhahood, if they lack this, so you must have it, take it seriously. Rego Acharya said to Drubgang Gelugyatso, whenever you come round, I hope we can praise Bodhicitta to our heart's content. Such talk is quite lost on the rest of our contemporaries. Just so few of us actually practice it. Some of us say, on the one hand, Bodhicitta is far too difficult for us to develop and therefore put it aside, while others say that's the common part of the Bodhicitta, the Mahayana, to meditate on more profound things, such as the two stages of highest yoga tantra, and put it aside. This is like a man searching for a wish-granting jewel in a puddle. So for someone practicing tantra in order to bring together, combine bliss and emptiness together, needs to understand the Mahayana, the Madhyamaka understanding of bodhicitta, emptiness. Sorry. But for someone following the Chittamatra philosophy, could shift at some point in the development of the clear light mind, and their view could shift automatically to the Madhyamaka philosophical understanding. And so through that, then they are able to understand that things are merely designated. So Bodhisattva is not necessarily a Madhyamaka philosopher. So the His Holiness was commenting. So only Bodhicitta is praised as being the basic practice of the days. These days some would say that there are certain deity as their basic practice. Others would say they have specialized in Chinese astrological texts. Still others say they do the spell for specifying disputes or whatever. But the time when you achieve Buddhahood will never come if you do not have Bodhicitta. Adisha thought Svarnadvipa the best of his teachers. When Adisha himself was ill, he said to Domtenpa, "Your mind is very wholesome. Give me your blessing." Adisha meant this in praise of Bodhicitta. So on page 515, Chapter Pabankaram told the story of Guru Dharma Rakshita, originally a Vaishika who became Madhyamaka by virtue of his Bodhicitta. Adisha's good work spread far and wide, both in India and Tibet. This happened through the power of his devotion to spiritual guides and his Bodhicitta. As the Kadampas of the old said, "You might have such concentration that you cannot hear a drum beaten right beside your ear, but it will go nowhere if you do not have this mind." Guru Rahula Gupta also said, "Seeing visions of tutelary deities, achieving clairvoyance and miraculous powers, and having mountain range firm concentration get you nowhere on their own. Meditate on love and compassion." In the sutras, Bodhicitta is said to be like a precious wheel of universal emperor, like a being's life force and like hands. It says in the sublime continuum of great vehicle, esteem for the supreme vehicle is the seed of wisdom. It is the mother of the development of Buddhahood. This is illustrated as follows. A father acts as the determinant cause of a particular family line, while the mother is an indeterminate cause. Precious Bodhicitta is similarly the determinant cause of Buddhahood. The wisdom that realizes emptiness is the indeterminate cause for any of the three types of enlightenment. Therefore, this emptiness without emptiness wisdom will act as a cause for the particular enlightenment of whatever vehicle, Mahayana or Hinayana, you happen to meet with. Thus, someone who merely has some understanding of bodhicitta will be enlightened sooner than someone lacking bodhicitta who meditates on, for example, the Mahamudra, the great completion doctrine, the two stages, and so forth. And Gishi Chegawa spreads the seven points of mind training, and following him, Jerembuche, Master Tsongkhapa, so we are at the development, the way to develop bodhicitta, which has two subheadings, the actual stages in training for bodhicitta and how to develop bodhicitta by means of ceremony. And the actual stages of training bodhicitta, there are further two subheadings, training in the mind by means of sevenfold cause and effect instructions, and training the mind through the interchange of self and others. The sevenfold cause and effect instruction works by seeing all sentient beings as attractive. It was the system used by Acharya Chandrakirti, Chandragomin, Chandrakshita, and others. Chandideva's system was to train the mind through the interchange of self and others. You will be able to develop bodhicitta if you are trained by means of either of these instructions, for they are the lineages that stem from the teacher himself and came down through Maitreya and Manjushri. Adisha's lamp for the path and other works of his set forth the instruction of Sarvanandri, but the guru who held both of these instructions, the sevenfold cause and effect system, was popular during the ancient Kadamba period, but the instruction on the interchange of self and others was passed on in secret. In this way, the entire lineage came down to Jitankapa. His own teaching told how to train the mind in both types of instructions. You should practice this combination of the two, however, although they must be combined in your meditation. When you train your own mind for bodhicitta, these two have to be discussed separately when taught. And therefore, there are eight sections of training the mind by means of sevenfold cause and effect instructions, immeasurable equanimity, understanding of all sentient beings to be your mothers, remembering their kindness, repaying their kindness, love through the force of attraction and compassion, altruism, and bodhicitta. The six, from understanding all beings to be your mother, to altruism, are the causes. The result is the development of bodhicitta. The result is the development of bodhicitta. This is how in all act as the how these all act as cause and effect. But before you can develop the wish to achieve Buddhahood to benefit all sentient beings, you must have the altruism to take responsibility for others' welfare. Further, you will not develop this altruism if you do not have such compassion that you are unable to bear the fact that all sentient beings are tormented by suffering. In order to generate this compassion, you must generate love through the force of attraction and attraction to all sentient beings, whereby they seem to be as attractive as your own cherished child. You must proceed such love by regarding all sentient beings as dear as one to whom you have the sort of attraction you have at present for people you hold dear but do not have for your enemies, because the ultimate form of dear one is your mother, is the mother you will love and cherish as valuable to all sentient beings. If you can prove that they have indeed been your mothers, remember their kindness and wish to repay them. That is why this is known as the cause and effect instruction, as each step is the necessary preliminary to the next, bringing each succeeding one into being. Don't be short-sighted and don't think this process is too long. You will definitely be able to develop bodhicitta if you train in stages. Kadamba instructions are in general profound, and this is especially so for the teachings of Tsongkhapa, inspired by the living presence of Manjushri, and they contain the full range of sutra and tantra quite stainlessly. they were even more profound than their predecessors. As my own precious guru, my refuge and protector, said, it is as if the past teachings of Tibet had prepared the ground for those of Jerembuche, Tsongkhapa, that followed and that were like refined gold. Taktsang Lotsawa, being frank, said, I praise your stores of unprecedented eloquence on all sutra and tantra, but especially Vajrayana, on all types of tantra, but especially the highest, and on all paths of the two stages, but especially the illusory body, or as Dzogchen Pelgye said, O Tsongkhapa, eloquent source of sutra and tantra, such examples are sincere praise. So the most powerful means to develop the bodhicitta is said in Bodhisattvacharya Avatara. And the most the worst enemy or obstacle is anger or hatred, and this is provoked by one's enemies or adversaries. And therefore, those adversaries who provoke anger and obstruct us from developing bodhicitta have to be seen as our spiritual teacher. So conferring Buddhahood seems rather high-flown. It is hard enough to confer even the lowest level of the path of accumulation, but you will be handed Buddhahood if you depend on the Lamrim. However, you will not develop Buddhahood if you do not train yourself in the proper sequence of the path. So first train yourself to understand that all beings have been your mothers. If you do not take the training in such thinking seriously, you will be as perverse as those people who sin, although they desire happiness. If you do not put any effort into it, so this is referring to the development of equanimity from the point of oneself as well as from the point of the others. Equanimity on page 519. The equanimity first meditated on is the sevenfold cause and effect instruction is immeasurable equanimity. On our side, we need to have equanimity of mind towards all sentient beings, but at present, our mind stream do not react equally to all. We get angry at some and attached to others. We could take neutral beings as our first object of mind training, then move on to our friends, and then to our enemies, or we could take all three together as our object. I think the latter of these two has the wider application. We should meditate on our enemies, friends, and those neutral, visualizing them in front of us. Sorry. We have three different reactions towards them: hostility, attraction, and indifference. In the first place, we become angry with the people we currently take to be our enemies. We then look into what our grievances are and think over this cause, their cause, that these people have harmed us. Next, we meditate on how nothing is certain, as discussed in the above section on thinking about the general suffering of samsara. We contemplate how these enemies had been dear to us in many past lives. This will stop us being hostile. We experience involuntary happiness toward those we now take to be our friends. Then we examine the reasons for this, that they now give us food, clothing, and so on. These are only trivial, short-term reasons. Our attachment to them would come to an end if we were to recall that they have been our enemies countless times over. We ignore those ancient beings we call neutral, those neither enemies nor friends, but in the past they have been your enemies and friends. Thus, all have been our enemies, all have been our friends, and if they are all the same, then all three of them, enemies, friends, and strangers, are equivalent. To whom should we be attached? With whom should we be angry? reflect on how senseless it is that our friends are the subject of our attachment. In the past, they were many times our enemies. It is also senseless that enemies are the subject of our hostility, for they have also been dear to us as many times in the past. Moreover, everyone we see now also only appears to be our enemy or friend. There is no certainty that any will always remain so. There are two points to view, that of ourselves and from that of others. There are two points of view. And not only it is senseless to be attached or hostile to others, our own part, but equally for their own part as well. They are all equally pitiable, all equally want happiness and don't want suffering. Thus, from this other point of view, all sentient beings are equal and should be treated impartially. From another point of view, you may think there are differences between them because some of them have benefited you in this life while others have done you harm. This is not so. Benefit done in the past is equal to benefit done now. Harm done in the past is equal to harm done now. For example, the damage is the same. If someone beat you on the head with a stick last year, or if they beat you on the head with a stick this year, so regarding their past and future lives, for that, the most powerful logic is to say that no consciousness, something that is not a consciousness cannot be a substantial, the basic material for a consciousness. So because there is no end or limit to sentient beings, it is very difficult. So he's commenting on this passage somewhere, which says that since there is no limit to sentient beings, therefore, all sentient beings have been one's mother countless times. I mean, in fact, it's innumerable that they have been our mothers. So through these, it's almost indicating that there is a limit in terms of the number of sentient beings. That's quite difficult. So the first course on page 522, the first course, Understanding All Sentient Beings. You must understand that all sentient beings were once ultimate form of friend or relative, your mother. You have no chance of gaining bodhicitta if you do not develop such an understanding. You can think over other profound topics such as emptiness using many different logical arguments, so those topics are not difficult to understand. But here it is difficult to be convinced by simply thinking deeply about a single scriptural quotation. Still, the sharp-witted follow ideas or dharmas and for them, things need to be proved by logic. It'll be hard to gain realization in this section since it has but one solitary line of reasoning. The reasoning is given in Dharmakirti's commentary on valid cognition. When someone has been reborn, how absurd it would be for these breathing organs and the mind to have developed from the body alone and not in dependence on things of their own class. What needs to be proved here is the beginningless nature of our consciousness. Today's mind is the continuation of yesterday's mind, and this in turn is a continuation of that of the day before. This much is understandable. The mind just after birth is the continuation of the mind that lay within the mother's womb. The mind immediately after it has entered the womb is... after it has entered the womb is the continuation of the mind immediately before entering the womb. As samsara goes back limitlessly in time, you cannot find anything that is the starting point of the mind. This proves that your rebirth must also be back limitlessly in time. So what has been read so far also includes what is known as a restricted cultivation of bodhicitta. So His Holiness was commenting on some passage on page 524 earlier. So first meditate on the final paragraph. First meditate on how your mother of this life has been your mother many times over the previous rebirths. Then meditate on how your father has been your mother to you. This is still. Then do this for all your friends and dear ones, then for all neutral. And then if you have managed to gain some insight from all this, meditate on how your enemies have been your mother. Only then should you carry out this training with respect to all sentient beings. Even so, you may feel, if all sentient beings had been my mothers, I would recognize them as such. I do not. They can't have been my mothers. But the Buddhas themselves have observed that not one sentient being has not been your mother. In reality, they and the second course, remembering their kindness. When you have insight into the fact that sentient beings have been your mother, you ought to think of the enormous kindness they showed to you as your mother. Take the case of your mother in this life. While you were in her care, she showed you great kindness. And in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end, in the beginning, she carried you in her body for 9 months and 10 days, cherishing you and protecting you. She was careful about things she ate or drank, and careful when moving and sitting, for fear of harming her child. If our mothers had not been known how to look after us so well, we would not have been able to meet with the Holy Dharma or study it now. This did not happen because we could fend for ourselves. It was through our mother's kindness. In the meantime, just after your birth, she handled you carefully with both her hands, even though you were completely unaware and looked as repulsive as a maggot. She felt as happy as she had found it, as if she had found a treasure. She kept you warm with her own body. You laid on, laid you on a soft bed, smiled lovingly at you, and even wiped your runny nose with her own mouth because she feared that you would be hurt if she used her hands. She feared that wiping away your excrement and using a piece of wood or whatever would hurt you, although they would have sufficed. So she used her own hands. She could not leave you alone for a day or even an hour. Each day she saved you from hundreds of things that would probably have killed you. A dog might have eaten you. A bird nearly pecked you. Or you could have fallen off a cliff. If her child suffered, don't you think she suffered too? Her only thoughts were for her child. Even in her sleep, she no longer dared sleep as soundly as she used to. Although she gradually taught her child how to stand, speak, or even how to eat and drink, that is why we can now move about, speak, and so on without difficulty. She didn't care about the sins, bad reputation, or suffering she acquired to earn money to keep you. She cherished you more than her own flesh. and so didn't spend any of her savings on herself. She spent them on you, whoever you may be, a man or woman who has married or been given on in marriage, or someone who has been sent off to be old, and your standard of living is due to the kindness of your mother. In short, she did the best she could within her power and knowledge for your welfare. There was no end to the kindness she showed in keeping you from all harm and suffering. All other sentient beings, such as your father, have also shown you the same kindness. As all sentient beings have been your mother in human lives, not just once but countless times, they have shown you much the same kindness as your mother in this life has. When other sentient beings were your mother and you were reborn, so the greatest kindness of our mother to us as human beings was that she had been kind to us. Her kindness, which is also said by the scientists. So right after birth, if the mother actually embraced her, held her child in her embrace, then it really helps the enlargement and development of the brain properly. So this is quite logical and natural process. So whether the mother has any intention or not, I mean, the child has benefited from it. And then the breastfeeding a child, some scientists say that when in the milk of the mother, there are certain chemicals or substances that actually develop as the months go on when breastfeeding the child. And so this also naturally happens. It's quite amazing. So therefore, they say that it's very important for the mother to breastfeed their children. And sometimes the children are given to the care of in the care of some ayahs, and give some chemical processed milks, which is said to be quite harmful also. And so we could think of the kindness of the mother in this way. And the basic love that we can show to others is because of the love that we have received from our own mother, and therefore there is a good reason to say the my kind mother. And so His Holiness was commenting on page the last paragraph in page 527, the first paragraph, just before the third course, repaying their kindness. It says in Chandidevas Compendium Instructions, you and others always have grounds for suffering. The sufferings of sentient beings are all equal, for made mad by delusion, blinded by benightedness. Every step they take treads the path to many an abyss. You should think in this way. Suppose your mother of this life were blind, had no one to guide her, and were mad. She is about to fall over a cliff, yet her child is near at hand. If she cannot turn to her child for help, to whom can she turn? If the child will not save its mother, whom will it save? All sentient beings likewise lack eyes of discriminate between Dharma and non-Dharma in order to see how to modify their behavior. And so you should feel that this responsibility to prepare the kindness has fallen on your shoulder. And in Chandra Gomin's letter to disciples says, likewise, like kinsmen stranded in samsara's ocean, they seem to have fallen into the ocean's rip, not recognizing them due to birth, death, and living rebirths. You ignore them. There's no shame greater than freeing on this yourself. That is, for our meditation of repaying their kindness, we should feel that we have the means of freeing these sentient beings stranded in the ocean current of samsara. The responsibility for rescuing them now rests with us, and we would be utterly contemptible if we did not do so. The heart of the middle way has this to say about repaying their kindness. Up till now, I was possessed by the devil of delusion, like an irritant put on a wound, or like being struck. And so in the yogic deeds of the Bodhisattvas, the 400 verses, says that one should not be angry with the sentient beings themselves, but negative emotions should be considered. The Buddhas considered them as real enemies. What makes me suffer the disease of suffering? Is there some way or other than nirvana to repay those who loved me, respected me, or helped me in my other rebirths? Thing as follows: by merely giving them food, clothing, and so forth, I will only free them from temporary hunger and thirst. It would not bring them any lasting benefit. And suppose your mother were met carrying a knife and trying to kill you, her child, and you would not be angry with her. You would surely try to rid her of her madness. This is how you must repay the kindness of your enemies. The fourth course, meditating on love that comes from the force of attraction. This love appears in the form of heartfelt cherishing and affection for sentient beings. Love through the force of attraction, said Padava, Geshe Padava, to an old woman, is just like the love you have for your son, Telekor. In other words, love through the force of attraction is being attracted to all sentient beings as if they were your only children. This love doesn't need a separate meditation topic. You'll develop it automatically when you have developed some feeling for the preceding three sections. And then there are certain lines, verses from Nagarjuna's precious garland. And the benefits are enormous, such as it's achieving these eight cardinal virtues of love. And so, for both the temporary samsaric as well as the benefit of enlightenment is rooted in compassion. And we are on the fifth course, the great compassion. As Chandrakirti says, in the engaging in the middle way, love is the seed for a magnificent crop, the state of victor. Like water, love makes that crop grow and matures it for abiding enjoyment. That is why at the outset I praise compassion. So the intensity or the strength of your bodhicitta also follows the strength of compassion. So through the when you feel sentient beings to be dear to you, and you feel dear to you, then that in turn gives rise to the wish that they may have happiness, and that in turn will help to develop great compassion towards them, wishing them out of suffering, and that the greater the strength of that, the greater the center of strength of your special resolve. Thank you. So it is important as a seed, since it ensures that the path is Mahayana at the outset and is the root of developing bodhicitta. In the meantime, it is as vital as water and manure, because it produces this perseverance along with the way that acts as armor against despondency at the tasks facing a child of victors. Finally, it is important as the fruit to be enjoyed because it is responsible for your continual good works for the benefit of others after you have achieved Buddhahood. The degree of strength of your bodhicitta is also a function of your great compassion and the various speeds at which bodhisattvas travel. The Lamrim fundamentally depend on the strength of their compassion. Bodhisattvas enter the secret tantras in search of rapid path, and they complete this path quickly. Through the power of their compassion. An illustration, when a child falls into a burning pit, his parents will rescue him instantly, whereas even the other relatives do not have the will to rescue him as unhesitatingly. This is due to the strength of their compassion. In your early meditation on compassion, take as your object a sheep being slaughtered by a butcher. You will easily develop compassion. You must contemplate the way the sheep dies, the sadistic way it is killed, and how it dies in a state of unbearable agony and terror. The sheep is turned upside down and thrown on its back. Its legs are tied together with rope. It struggles, but it is helpless. It can tell its life is threatened, but cannot escape, and has no protector or refuge. And so, seeing the suffering, inflicting suffering, you can have compassion, but and also seeing the sentient beings actually recklessly engaging in the causes of future suffering, you can also feel compassion towards them as well. Its eyes are full of tears, and it stares into the butcher's face. Nevertheless, when we see a sheep being slaughtered like this, we wonder if it is intelligent enough to know what is happening. Once a butcher was slaughtering a number of sheep. After killing the first few, he bound one of them for slaughter. Another sheep happened to be standing close to the butcher's knife, and it kicked up dirt to conceal it. The story shows that animals to experience unbearable errands. And so when you are able to understand and to really be able to see the condition suffering, then whoever you see, whether high or low, to all people, you will have this feeling that they are under the sway of this kind of condition suffering. This story shows that animals do experience unbearable terror and suffering. For the sheep now grazing on the grassy mountainside, who have not yet been led to the slaughter yard, sooner or later the same will befall them. For your meditation and compassion, think how they have been your mothers in so many of your past lives. Once you have developed some insight into this, you recall your meditation on the suffering of the lower realms that you yourself may have to undergo, and then meditate on how the other sentient beings will also undergo. So with regard to the sequence of the wish for other sentient beings to have happiness and then also compassion between these two, there's no definite sequence, no fixed sequence. And when you do the practice of giving and taking, giving is done with meditation, visualization and meditation on love, and taking is done with visualization of compassion. And compassion is done in order to visualize or meditate on, cultivate compassion. So it's on page 532. says, here are the criteria for having developed the great compassion in your mind stream. You have developed it. If, even while eating or drinking, you think about all sentient beings and want them all to be free of suffering, just like a mother worrying about her beloved child who has been struck down by a virulent disease. However, the compassion merely wanting beings to be free from suffering is common to Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. The compassion is actually wishing to save them from this suffering. Their suffering is exclusive to the Mahayana. You should develop this later time. Still, there are these are hard things to develop, and you must work very hard indeed at these techniques. If you have had a serious illness in the past, when you see people with the same sickness, you will feel compassion for them, since you have gone through the same thing yourself. So it should also be easy to develop compassion after you undergo some excellent meditation on suffering. So unless you are able to see all the interests, inclinations, and mental dispositions, and their latent potencies, and so forth, there's no way you can serve sentient beings fully. And therefore, meditating on the emptiness with the intention to overcome the obscuration to knowledge helps to develop attain Buddhahood. So love through a force of attraction so strong that it makes you cherish sentient beings and hold them dear is as much a form of love as love that wishes them happiness. However, the slight difference is that one form is general and the other is specific. Love through the force of attraction is the sum of three things: understanding that all sentient beings are your mother, remembering their kindness, and wishing to repay their kindness. It necessarily precedes great compassion, for it brings about the generation of this great compassion. Compassion and the love that wishes happiness to do not have such a fixed cause and effect relationship. One section of the great stages part dealing with the repayment of kindness and kindness of sentient beings tell us how to meditate on love that wishes happiness, and it is appropriate for you to sometimes meditate on this type of love before you meditate on compassion. However, meditating on this type of love after the compassion meditations accords with the traditional instruction on pursuing the practice. Next, we'll deal with the altruism. At this stage, we'll meditate mainly on the love that wishes all beings to have happiness. However, according to the headings in the great stages of the path, we ought to contemplate this type of love combined with a force of attraction type before contemplating compassion. The sixth course, altruism. You have a responsibility toward your mother. Likewise, you should take responsibility for relieving all sentient beings of their suffering and making them totally happy. You should resolve, I myself will lead them all to Buddhahood. This is being more altruistic than either Shravakas or Pratyeka Buddhas. Suppose you saw a man about to throw himself off a cliff. This unbearable sight might move you to feel, is there no one to save him? Such a reaction is one of love and compassion, but instead of leaving things at that, you could decide to rescue him yourself. That would be analogous to this altruism. Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas have in general only love and compassion, not altruism. My precious Guru has said that the difference between this altruism and the way you take on responsibility during the section on repaying their kindness is illustrated by the example of a trader either intending to buy some goods or having already closed the business deal. One has similarly made up one's mind in the one section, but not in the other. Developing bodhicitta, next. After taking on this responsibility, see if you are able to carry it out yet. You are unable to help even a single being. you are forced to look for someone who can do this effectively and then see if you can achieve such a state. Some great worldly beings, Brahma or Indra, for example, are of no help at all to sentient beings. And the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas and Arahats can do little better than since they have not abandoned all their fetters. The first level bodhisattva can help sentient beings to a much greater extent, but they can only do a fraction of what the bodhisattvas who will reach enlightenment in the next rebirth can achieve. So having developed the bodhicitta through the sevenfold instruction of cause and effect, we leave there. Cautious. This mind training for the summary of this seven. Collections vast as space that I have amassed from working with effort at this practice for a great length of time. May I become the chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind's wisdom eye is blinded by ignorance. Best of complete graded parts of the teaching, and may I please all the Buddhas by my practice. Darkness from the minds of all beings, all sentient beings, with the points of the path as I have discerned them. May I uphold Buddha's teaching for a very long time. Precious teachings have not yet spread, or once spread, have declined. May I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time by even this graded path of enlightenment completed due to the wondrous, virtuous conduct of the Buddhas and dear children. And create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent paths, never be parted in any of their lives from the purest path praised by the Buddhas. May they always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere. Oh, operations of evil thoughts and deeds of the negative forces of humans and non-humans who harbor malice through their perverted prayers against the teaching of the victorious one. Be totally vanquished through the power of the truth of the three jewels.